3. Hennessy awoke with a start. She was moving. She was not just moving. She was moving fast. It was like a movie. She saw herself from above, looking down. God gazing down on his creation. A slender black girl with a fro full of debris tumbled ass over tits over ass again down hundreds of neatly stacked hay bales in an old barn. Her rag doll body was bizarrely caged in something that looked like an enormous wooden hamster wheel. It was rare that the waking world made less sense than the dreaming one. But the bigger picture didn't become clear until she careened all the way to the barn floor, breath busting from her paralyzed body. The bigger picture was this. Wheels, wheels, wheels. The thing she thought looked like a hamster wheel around her was a tangle of actual wheels. It was just one of many that filled the barn. There were muscular tractor wheels, fragile bicycle wheels, little toy wheels, man-sized wooden carriage wheels, child-sized plastic steering wheels, spokes dangled from rafters. Rims wedged between hay bales. They ramped over mannequins and up against the doors. Every wheel had a single word printed or burned into it. Tamquam. It looked like an art installation. A prank. Insanity. It was breaking Hennessy's brain. One part of her mind whispered, "This is how it's always been. The wheels were always here." The other part, however, knew better. This was how it always worked when she saw other dreamers' dreams manifest. They didn't just magically appear. Instead, the dream magic edited her memory. Not completely, just enough to create two realities. One where the dreams had always been there, and one where they hadn't. Brain-breaking. "Ronan," Bride's voice sounded irritated. A delicate light hissed into existence, revealing Bride halfway up the towering stack of old hay bales. The dreamer's exploration of the Living History Museum had turned up three decent possibilities for dreaming locations. A small diorama recreating the close-sleeping quarters of a submarine, a single four-poster bed in a recreation of some historical figure's bedroom, and this, a large recreation of an old hay barn. So realistic that it seemed likely it had probably already existed on the property pre-museum. Bride climbed down the hay bales, complaining as he did, "Aren't you tired of doing this?" Because this wasn't the first time Ronan had trashed a place since they'd begun traveling with Bride. He'd filled a through hiking shelter with bleeding rocks, destroyed the living room of an abandoned rambler with a very small tornado, busted out the wall of a cheap cash-only motel with an invisible car. He'd trashed rooms with dead earthworms and hissing microphones, school textbooks and expired bacon. Every zip code they'd stayed in had been left with Ronan Lynch's indelible mark. Hennessy had to admit, a small, rubbishy part of her was glad for all of this, because as long as Ronan Lynch, the great Ronan Lynch, was fucking up at this level, it made Hennessy's inability to kick the lace from her dreams not quite as damning. "Hennessy, are you awake?" Bride asked the air. Hennessy couldn't yet reply or move. Dreamers always did this after a successful dream. They saw their temporarily paralyzed bodies from above for a few minutes. She was still getting used to the idea that this paralysis didn't have to be synonymous with shame. Before all this, it had always meant she'd made another copy of herself. It had meant failure. Now, Even though she couldn't see what she'd brought back from the dream, she was sure, at least, it wasn't another Jordan Hennessy. No more copies. Ever. She'd never been so long without any of her girls before. Jordan. Jordan. The world shouts at you. The waking world. The dreaming world. You don't have to listen to it, but you do. And until you learn to shout louder than it, we're going to keep having this happen. Bride had uncovered Ronan from beneath a pile of hay bales and wheels like the prize in the bottom of a cereal box. His star pupil was just as paralyzed as Hennessy, so Ronan couldn't escape the lecture as Bride went on. I expect better from you. How long did it take us to find a place with this much power in the bank? And what did you write a check for? This. The shit. Did you give half a thought to any other dreamer while you were doing this? No, you just ran your mouth, and out this came. And Hennessy was back. She could feel her body again, and she was looking at the world through her own eyes. Shouldering off her cage of wheels, she searched the hay around her, looking for whatever object she had brought back from her dream. The painting, the brush, the palette, something. But all she found was hay and wheels and yet more hay. Bride was still going, and what a way to die, suffocated under rotting food for cows that don't exist anymore. The Grey Warren, isn't that what your Forest Lindenmere calls you? Dreamer and protector. Dreamer and protector and fool with lungs full of silage if I hadn't been here. For what? I was trying, Ronan finally snarled. So was Hennessy, and you took it from her, Bride said. Man, that little rubbishy part of Hennessy was having a field day. Did you manage to find your painting, Hennessy? The haystack has not produced a needle thus far, she said. Bride flicked his eyes around the barn. Dreams could sometimes end up quite far away from their dreamer, especially when they were big, but there was no sign of any of the large things from the dream, like a canvas or the chair he'd been sitting on. Then she spotted it. On her thumb, there was the faintest smear of feather pink paint, the same pink she'd smeared across the canvas in the dream. This was what she'd been paralyzed for, just a mere scraping of dried pigment. She supposed Jordan would have been delighted to see it. It wasn't a dreamt copy of Hennessy, and it wasn't the lace. Technically, that was huge progress, even if it didn't feel like it. Sometimes, as Ronan had just demonstrated, it was as much about what you didn't dream as what you did. She showed her thumb to Bride as if she were hitchhiking. Found it. Bride rounded on Ronan again. So you pulled the lay right out from beneath her. What a gentleman. How much is left now? What do you feel? Ronan looked like a cat doused with water. Right, you can't. I forgot, Bride went on. The fairy tales we tell ourselves are so comforting in times of darkness. I'll tell you how much. Very little. The ley line bent over backward for a barn full of wheels going nowhere. And if the moderators drove up right now, where would you be? Up Shit Creek and unable to dream a paddle. The rubbishy part of Hennessy was still rubbishy and pleased to see Ronan getting reamed out, but the rest of her felt bad enough to come to his rescue. Pity, too, she said, leaping to her feet. I needed that ley line. I was just warming up. I was going to bring out Max Ernst's entire cabin in Sedona, with Max Ernst inside it. And a bunch of his art, maybe his wife, too. He built that thing with his own two hands after surviving two wars, did you know? The cabin, I mean, not the wife. I think she was from New York. Or maybe she moved there after Ernst died, I don't remember. But I think she was the one who said there was no such thing as a woman artist. There was just an artist. Oh, I was also going to dream that bird thing of his in your honor, Ronan Lynch. He was like you, had that bird alter ego, couldn't tell the difference between birds and humans, lop, lop.
Hennessy, this isn't, Bride started. She blew on.
I knew I'd have the name if I thought about it hard enough. Kept thinking it was Rabbity and it was Lop Lop. Yeah, so the cabin, the studio, the Dadaist. It was going to be my dreaming masterwork, inspired by these dioramas. That's the way a good artist works, isn't it? She takes in the things around her and delivers not a copy, but a response to the world she's absorbed. I behold the supposed West Virginia Museum of Living History with its static figures frozen in staged historical moments, and I raise you real people in actual historical properties. A surrealist in a surrealist piece. Now that's living art. That's what Dadaism is all about. This is the Hennessy Museum. Discounts available for children under 12 and parties over 20. Bride gave her a withering look, but it had worked. All her words had drained him of his. He just shook his head and tossed Ronan's jacket at him.
Get your things. It's 3 hours to the nearest ley line. We've got to get going before this one turns the lack of ley into an emergency again.
I'm not that damn fragile, Ronan protested. Bride just said,
don't forget your bird.
After Bride stalked off through the doors, Hennessy held out an arm to help Ronan up from the hay.
Must have been a hell of a dream.
Oh, fuck off, Ronan said.
Fuck off yourself. You're welcome.
Ronan shouldered on his jacket. What was it going to be? Your dream. Don't say plop-lop.
Lop-lop, you Neanderthal. Hennessy said
she didn't want to talk about the dream. She didn't want to talk about Jordan.
She just wanted to keep moving so she didn't have to think about any of it too hard while she was awake, because when she thought about it, she got sad. And when she got sad, she got angry. And when she got angry, she wanted to kill moderators. And when she wanted to kill moderators, Bride told her to bide her time. She didn't want to bide her time.
That's the crankiest I've ever seen him. Maybe he'll get tired of us and piss off to whatever he was doing before.
This was a topic she and Ronan had already discussed briefly in whispers when they had moments here and there without Bride. Who was this person they were following?
Where had he been before? They knew he'd been infamous when they first met him, that his name was already whispered around black markets. But for what? And how eager was he to get back to it?
Ronan rubbed a thumb over the wheel closest to him, pressing his fingers into the etched word Tamquam. This was a thing Hennessy was learning about Ronan Lynch. He always thought he was keeping his secrets by keeping his mouth shut, but he ended up telling them in other ways. He said,
but what were you dreaming about, really?
A lady never tells, Hennessy said, and it's impolite to ask.
Whatever.
Jordan.
I said whatever.
And I said, Jordan. If he had pressed her harder, she would have talked about it, and part of her wanted him to. But instead, he just kicked one of the wheels. It occurred to her, in a distant way, that maybe he wanted her to press him about his dream, too. Something must have bothered him enough that he couldn't prevent all these wheels from driving out of his head, after all. But the idea of holding the weight of his drama on top of her own felt like too much. So they just silently assembled themselves. Hennessy got her sword. Ronan got his bird. At the door, he turned to survey what he had done. All those wheels. He was an unusual silhouette with the raven crouched on his shoulder, the sword strapped to his back. Hennessy thought he would have made a fairly good portrait subject if everything about him wasn't supposed to be secret, which made her think about how, in her dream, she'd thought about how Jordan would have thought pride an appropriate portrait subject. "I wonder what she's up to," Hennessy said, "what she and your brother are up to." Ronan's voice was dry and disappointed as he turned away. "Bet they're having a blast."